You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, it's already been quite a day. We'll have up on the website. We did a Facebook Live on the scene live stream this morning. There was a armed standoff in Warwick Metro Boulevard at a extended stay. So we don't have all the details just yet, but it was quite a scene. And Warwick SWAT was there. And again, we'll have the video. It's already up on Facebook. We'll have it posted on YouTube as well. Seems like it was some kind of a... Someone was taken out in a gurney into the ambulance. And then I believe saw at least one person put into a squad car. But we'll get more details. Started early this morning and then ended... I'd say it was probably a four-hour armed standoff where... Police, there was heavy, heavy SWAT inside of this extended stay. We were outside. You can see it. Now, what else is happening? How about the fact that Providence Pallet Shelters, the Foxy Village, set to open in early spring? Let's pick up the story with Channel 12 WPRI.
Being set up next to the Foxy Lady.
Here we go.
Reporter Kayla Fish was at tonight's meeting and joins us now with the details.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of support among city councilors and elected officials for these temporary pallet houses, which will be known as Echo Village here in Providence. But residents have their concerns, and they made them known here tonight.
You're going in a freaking circle. What's the solution?
Lydia Bamijoko lives in Ward 12 in Providence, not far from where the State Department of Housing has set up dozens of temporary pallet shelters on vacant land near the Foxy Lady Strip Club.
It's ridiculous. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating.
She attended a meeting Wednesday to bring her concerns to local leaders and those running the project. The 45 pallet shelters built and operated by the nonprofit House of Hope have locking doors, electricity, and other amenities to provide homeless individuals with a place to stay.
Something that that's more safe and sound and stabilizing than perhaps their car or a tent maybe or the literal streets.
But many who spoke at the meeting say they're upset they weren't told about the shelters before they were built.
And I understand that. But I think the majority of people think it's a good thing that people need to be housed. They need to have some type of dignity and respect. So that's not the issue.
Others feel the temporary shelters don't address the housing crisis in general, including the lack of affordable homes.
Where is the solution? And I understand they keep saying have the patience. It takes a little time. They need to get their heads together and find a solution, not keep passing the buck.
We have to do what we have to do because it's getting worse instead of better.
Now, we were previously told that Echo Village would open in March, but leaders tonight tell me that they now expect the project to be up and running by early spring. In Providence, I'm Kayla Fish, 12 News.
Well, it sounds early spring, so it sounds like later into the month. Now, we've had video on this. We've been live there, Foxy Village. I have to admit, I love the fact that Channel 12... I want to give credit to both Mike Montecalvo, who I've known for a very, very long time, and also Kayla. I like the fact that they're saying the Fox, it's right behind the Foxy Village, and, the Foxy Lee, and it is. So now what it is if you're standing at where these pallet shelters are going to be, if you go straight down, that's where it's the ramp, and then that's actually 95. If you look up, there's a street there, and then above the street, there's a parking lot, and then on top of that is, in fact, the Foxy Lady. Now, I know of various people that live in that area, well, not a lot, but some people that live in that area, certainly business people, and they're not thrilled about this at all, because it is certainly going to bring... It's going to bring crime. It's going to bring drugs. It's going to be people going at all times of the day and night. And, you know, there's different facets of this. Now, they can lock. So what if there's somebody who, you know, that could be turned into like an armed standoff? Or what if, you know, they're going to have problems with people getting locked out? There's going to be fights. We've seen in the past when they tried to let some of these homeless individuals stay at the Cranston Street Armory, you know, the simplest thing, it turned into a disaster. they had bathroom facilities, but restroom facility, whatever you want to call it, but a place where someone, an adult, could relieve themselves. But people would, if there was someone, if, you know, I don't know all the details, but I think if there was someone that was in the restroom, either just waiting their turn or whatever, then people would just, like, relieve themselves in the corner. Or inside the restroom, they would just, you know, relieve themselves on the floor. I mean, it turned into, like, a complete mess. So that's one facet. Number two, they keep saying temporary. These people aren't leaving. Where are they going? They're not going to go anywhere. I get that you have someone right now, seemingly, that maybe they sleep under an underpass. And there are people that have nowhere to go. So, okay, if we're looking at this and you have someone who's either sleeping on the ground or on a park bench, somewhere exposed, or it's like the size of a garden shed, then of course, with it has heat and air conditioning, that, but they're not going to leave. Because the type of vagabond lifestyle they live, part of it is like a vicious cycle. Part of why they don't work is if you always have to worry about where are you going to keep your things, where are you going to use the restroom, where's your next meal going to be, you spend all day, you have breakfast, and then, you know, you do whatever, but then you have to then remember that at some point then you have to focus on, you know, that where are you going to get lunch, and then where are you going to get dinner? And then they bounce around like that. So I'm not sure what to make of this, other than on the West Coast in California, when they have tried this, it ends up not being temporary housing. The people, then they never leave. And they stay there. So then they need to add more of them. I think this is just going to be the beginning. I don't know what I didn't say I have what the solution is. This doesn't sound like a solution. And with air conditioning, they are going to stay there in the summertime. It's going to be like these little shanty-type villages. They will be high crime. I think they're going to have a separate facility place that you could use the restroom. They're going to have volunteers working with them, what have you. But I am not convinced that this is where everything should be going. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Dueling day at the border. Both President Biden and President Trump set to visit the U.S.-Mexico border. Both of them, both the two, the campaign, both of them. Let's pick up the latest with ABC.
Visits here to the border today. President Biden and Donald Trump will outline their very different visions for how to tackle this immigration crisis. The president is expected to meet with Border Patrol and local law enforcement and to once again blame Donald Trump for tanking that bipartisan border deal that would have included some of the toughest reforms in decades. That legislation would have imposed stricter asylum restrictions, included daily limits on border crossings, and billions of dollars in new funding for security. But Donald Trump pressured Republicans to kill that bill to deny deny President Biden a political win. Donald Trump is also eager to run on this issue in November. He is already promising mass deportations if elected and ratcheting up his rhetoric. Today, Trump and Biden will make their case as they both look to own this issue in November, Michael.
And Mary, President Biden went for his annual physical yesterday. What did we learn from that?
Yeah, he did. And Michael, his doctor says the president is fit to serve. He found no new health concerns over the last year. He did say that the president is, quote, a healthy, active, robust 81-year-old. The annual exam did not, however, include a mental fitness test. His doctors didn't think it was necessary. And the White House argues the president passes a cognitive test every day just by doing his job. Michael.
All right, Mary, thank you so much.
It is, folks, you got to admit, it's pretty comical that Biden is saying he's heading to the border because it's chaos at the border. Yeah, you created the chaos at the border. I mean, what a joke. Yeah, it is chaos. That's because of Biden and Harris, it's chaos. The border is chaos. Yes, it absolutely is chaos. Because of your inaction. I believe that people are going to reject President Biden trying to say that he can, in fact, fix the border. I don't believe that. I mean, I don't believe that. I don't think anyone is going to believe that. But yeah, he's going to fix the border, him and Harris. It's not happening. You also have Mitch McConnell is going to be stepping down. Let me pick up. This is the Today Show report about the two of them going to the border today. Let me hear this.
Immigration and its impact on the 2024 race. NBC's senior White House correspondent Gabe Gutierrez joins us now from Brownsville, Texas. Gabe, what are you expecting today?
Hey there, Hoda. Good morning. It'll be a dramatic split screen between both presidential frontrunners amid a record number of migrant crossings at the southern border. This is President Biden's second border visit since taking office. Former President Trump will be just over 300 miles away in Eagle Pass, Texas. President Biden is hoping to highlight the need to pass that bipartisan border security deal that boosts resources and tightens asylum rules. You'll remember it failed in Congress, due in part to former President Trump's opposition. Mr. Trump, meanwhile, is expected to capitalize on those record number of crossings and put the blame squarely on President Biden. The former president is promising to carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in history if reelected, Hoda.
All right. And Gabe, there's another big headline out there. President Biden received his annual physical yesterday. Mm-hmm. What were the takeaways there?
Yeah, President Biden was declared fit for duty and overall healthy by his doctor. The president telling reporters yesterday there is nothing different than last year. We did learn that Mr. Biden's gait has stiffened because of age-related wear and tear of his spine. And also, he has started using a sleep apnea machine and had a root canal in June. In response to questions about his mental fitness following that special counsel report, the White House press secretary says his doctors do not think he needs a cognitive test, Hoda.
All right, Gabe.
Come on. What do you mean he doesn't need a cognitive test? Who believes that? What? Of course he needs a cognitive. That is preposterous. Of course he needs a cognitive test. Meanwhile, Putin has renewed his threat of a nuclear conflict. This doesn't sound good. Now, again, and this is also, well, let me just play. This is the latest from the Today Show.
The West. NBC's chief international correspondent, Keir Simmons, has the latest on all of that. Keir, good morning.
Yep. Savannah, good morning to you. Ksenia Karolina's appeal was held in private in a Russian court. This morning we learned she lost that appeal, meaning she will remain in prison. The ballerina with dual American and U.S. citizenship is accused of treason for donating money to Ukraine. Savannah, less than $52. The court set another deadline of April the 6th, but she's the latest U.S. citizen to be held in Russia. And journalist Evan Gershkovich, who has been in custody for almost a year, accused of espionage. His newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, says he is innocent and was doing his work as a reporter. As you mentioned, Savannah, at the same time, a menacing split screen. President Putin giving a keynote speech highlighting recent advances in Ukraine, though the battlefield there remains largely unchanged, saying he bows at the feet of Russian, quote, heroes, calling for a minute's silence for soldiers, he said, are, quote, going through the meat grinder of War. His address shown Savannah on giant screens around Moscow, and including a thinly veiled nuclear threat if Russia puts troops on the ground in Ukraine, saying, "We too have weapons that can strike targets on their territory." Savannah, Putin is 2 weeks from an election, saying, "We are a pillar of democracy." Though, of course, when Russia votes next month, there will only be one certain winner. Savannah.
You know, the guy is just pure evil. I mean, he is absolutely evil personified. How he is still breathing is just absolutely beyond me. But he is, as a matter of fact. So now I also just want to play, you know, as bad as the emergency rooms are in Rhode Island, Massachusetts is no bargain either. I didn't realize Massachusetts is the second. I thought we were the worst, but
we went into the
this is a piece on Boston 25.
We're waiting, I wanted to leave. My wife says, "No, we've been here 16 hours already. You're not going to waste that and just walk out."
It was 16 hours?
I was there longer.
Massachusetts ERs have the second longest wait times in the nation.
What is your advice for patients when it comes to deciding, hey, should I go to the ER or not?
Tonight at 10:15 on Boston 25 News, your local...
Good report. I thought we were the worst. I don't know. Maybe they're challenging us. We have like a little interstate rivalry going on. Wow. That's not good. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. So Governor McKee has essentially been AWOL all week. I mean, here it is the end of the week. He has not been seen. Now, Saturday, we believe he's going to show up at the there's a St. Patrick's Day parade in Pawtucket. So he's expected to march. I wonder what that will be like. Now, meanwhile, he still has not answered about his policy. And let's be very clear. Governor McKee has not clarified the Rhode Island policy when it comes to illegals. That issue is not going away. Both President Biden and President Trump will be at the border. And more of the crimes being committed by illegals in the country are being highlighted. And I am telling you, it is a matter of time before a very, very serious crime happens here in Rhode Island. I want to play. Fox was talking about what happened on Fox News. They had Fox News Channel. They had the situation with the illegal that murdered that poor young college student in Georgia.
But many of the tragic consequences are still being felt of many who have illegally crossed and were released into the U.S. Nothing more prominent now than the tragic murder of Lakin Riley, the University of Georgia nursing student killed at the hands of Jose Ibarra, the Venezuelan who crossed in El Paso in 2022 and was released. But that's not the only isolated case. We're learning now about many more. I can show you a full screen of this Salvadoran migrant illegally present, according to ICE. His name is Nilson Granados Trejo, accused of murdering, killing a tragic death of a 2-year-old infant. And that doesn't stop in Maryland there. Go down to Louisiana, in Kenner, Louisiana, a Honduran migrant accused of raping at knife point a 14-year-old teenage girl.
You know, it is just, it is endless right now. And we do have crime here in Rhode Island. One of the reasons why it's not highlighted as much is simply because in Rhode Island, Governor McKee has it that our law enforcement agencies don't question what their immigration status is. So it doesn't automatically come out when a lot of this, when a lot of these things happen, when a lot of these crimes start to happen. So, but there was a story that in Massachusetts, they just arrested another Guatemalan child molester, sexual assault. There's definitely something, there's an element of the culture that we've kind of touched on that in South America, they seemingly, a lot of the males go for younger women, and it seemingly is not against the law or frowned upon the way it is here. But it is, and right now, I think it's also interesting that we're on our own. Mass Democrats weighing tightening shelter program amid migrant influx, lack of federal help. The federal help is not coming. So this story in the Globe, there's no mounting cost, no signs of help from Washington, nor will there be. So in Massachusetts, they're saying they administer a shelter program. Costs are expected to reach $1 billion this year, another $1 billion next year. But then when you break down exactly who is there, half of the people that are there are not even supposed to be in the country right now. So, I mean, this is, just think of the amount of money. Governor Healey last year, Maura Healey, imposed a 7,500 family cap on the system. And then it turned out that half of them are, in fact, of that, the 7,500, 3,745 were migrants, refugees, or asylum seekers. It's not designed that way. The money's not supposed to go there. Regular Americans are not receiving the resources they should. They're importing all this poverty. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. AEP Services. They take great pride installing fences of all kinds. Vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link. Experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business. 401-228-7190. 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative landscape. It adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today. AEP Services. 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote, AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. It's time for our legal segment. Joining us right now, he is our legal expert, one of Rhode Island's top attorneys. It is attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, let's start off with, and I caught some of this yesterday, uncomfortable to say the very least. This is the Fannie Willis trial that's taking place right now in Georgia. It's a very serious case, RICO charges against President Trump. But the person that she was apparently in a relationship with, his attorney was on the stand, so it was a lawyer on the stand, but it was at times difficult to watch.
This case keeps taking the most unusual twists and turns. You're right, John. This is the case where Fannie Willis, the prosecutor, hires an attorney, Nathan Wade. Now, the question is, did they engage or commence a romantic relationship after she hired him, or were they engaged in a relationship before? The central question being, in addition to that issue, did Willis benefit? Because when Wade gets hired now, he has money that he's being paid to be a part of the prosecution team. And arguably some of that money he was using to take Fannie Willis on trips and kind of lavish vacations. She has claimed a bit preposterously that she paid for everything herself because she always has big amounts of cash on hand because that's what her dad raised her to believe she should be doing. Of course, there's no record of where she acquired or accumulated these sums of cash. She doesn't have bank records that she was at least able to produce showing where she might have taken cash out. She claims she accumulated it because if she went to the public supermarket, she'd pay with a check for more than what the groceries cost, and she'd get cash back as change. It kind of tests really her credibility. Yesterday, in court, the attorney for Nathan Wade, who was also his law partner, this guy named Terrence Bradley, testified that he was Wade's law partner for 10 years, and for a period of time, he represented Wade in his divorce. Now, before he came into court to testify, one of the defense attorneys, one of the lead defense attorneys, was in touch with him. And there's a series of texts between defense counsel and this guy, Terrence Bradley. And amongst the questions that there's a back and forth with texts were, did Willis and Nathan Wade commence their romantic relationship prior to 2021? Terrence Bradley texts back, quote, absolutely, close quote. Now, on the stand, when he showed these texts, and says, well, you said that the relationships, when asked if it started before 2021, you responded, absolutely. On the stand, it's almost laughable. He says, well, I was just speculating. Oh, really? Now, it goes further. Defense counsel had submitted, or prepared, I should say, a draft motion to dismiss the case. And in her pleading, in draft form, she had sent it to this guy, Terrence Bradley, to get his take. Was it accurate? And in that motion to dismiss, she had laid out the chronology about when Willis and Wade engaged in their romantic relationship, when he got hired, and all of the timeline and the chronology. Defense counsel sends it to Bradley and says, what do you think? And his response is, it looks good to me. The next day she files it. And when asked about that, he said, again, I was just speculating. I was just guessing. And that doesn't really stand up, in my view, to any serious assessment of this guy's credibility. He didn't want to be there. He had tried to wriggle off the hook saying that everything he might have testified to was protected under the attorney-client privilege. The judge had an in-chambers discussion with this guy Bradley and his attorney. The judge concluded that Terrence Bradley was attempting to improperly invoke the attorney-client privilege, and he was compelled to testify. So you got Bradley, before he's on the stand, saying absolutely in terms of when their relationship began, romantic relationship between Willis and Wade began. You've got Willis's quote-unquote good friend who testified that this romantic relationship started in 2019, okay, and then my friend anymore. Well, duh. But the facts don't look good for what Willis and Wade are claiming. Now, assuming the judge does not believe Willis or Wade and thinks that the testimony of Bradley was not credible, I mean, the judge, I think, at the very least, will ultimately take Willis and Wade off the case. Do I think the judge will then dismiss the case in its entirety? I don't think so, not at this point. I think that certainly some other individuals from within the DA's office could then take the case over, or the judge might require outside counsel to come in, like special counsel, someone from outside of the DA's office to be, like, if you will, the special prosecutor, who would have to make an independent assessment of whether this case was worthy of going forward. Certainly the next layer of scrutiny this case is going to get was the extent of the coordination, if any, between Willis's DA office and the U.S. Attorney's office and or the White House, which would be improper. But it really doesn't look like it's going well for Willis and Nathan Wade as the testimony is laying out. I think Willis has real credibility problems. I mean, she was so belligerent and argumentative and antagonistic on the stand. I can't imagine she made a good impression on the judge, who's going to make the ultimate determination. It was an interesting day, but for this lawyer, Bradley, to suddenly say that everything that he affirmed with defense counsel was now simply a speculation, I don't think the judge is going to buy it, John.
Tim Dodd, it was, first of all, it was interesting to see that it seems that these two, Wade and Bradley, thought that they would forever be protected by attorney-client privilege. That was not the case. It was also interesting to see the defense, one right after another. I don't remember the last time I've seen that many attorneys get to question a witness in that in this manner. But it's not over yet. But just for people to understand, Tim Dodd, it certainly seems that Wade is not any type of special legal practice that he would assist with this. It sure seems that she brought him, hired him, they had a relationship, and then with the money she would pay him, they would then go on these vacations. I mean, that's the way it came off.
Oh, yeah, and this guy Nathan Wade might be a fine attorney, but he has no experience, or at least extensive experience, in prosecuting this type of very complex case against, what is it, 17 or 19 defendants. He's got no track record, from what I understand, in prosecuting this type of matter. And the further question is, weren't there people in the DA's office already on staff who would have been capable of taking lead and prosecuting this case? Why did they have to go outside of the DA's office, hire a guy at a very high hourly rate? It's not like having a salaried employee of the DA's office who was essentially inexperienced in this type of prosecution.
Yeah.
And that all undercuts. If she had hired some master prosecutor who had handled these types of cases before, you might say, well, it makes sense. But to hire a guy who didn't have the appropriate background and experience in trying these types of cases would lead you to really scratch your head and say, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So the optics are bad. The facts are bad. The innuendo is bad. The timeline is bad. It's all bad for Fannie Willis at this point. At the very least, it looks like President Trump and the co-defendants might get a significant delay in this thing ever going to trial.
Yep.
I just don't know if this judge would have the intestinal fortitude to dismiss this case in its entirety, based upon the testimony that's coming out. I do think that ultimately Willis and Wade, and maybe this guy Bradley, might be referred to disciplinary counsel, because it doesn't appear like they're testifying truthfully. It doesn't appear that way while they're under oath.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead, our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-8255. 0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. We're speaking with our legal expert, it's attorney Tim Dutt. Tim, the Karen Reed defense team. Karen Reed case was supposed to start coming up mid-March, and the defense has seemingly been pushing for a delay. And the judge who's been pretty firm in this, Judge, it does seem now, based on this amount of documents they're receiving, that it does seem that the trial for now is delayed at least another month until April.
Yes, the case was supposed to start. They were supposed to start impaneling a jury. I believe it was on March 12th. The prosecutors have, within the recent days, dumped about 3,100 pages of material, which is correspondence and communications between the DA's office and the U.S. Attorney's office. So the defense says, look, we just had 3,100 pages of material dumped on us. We think much of it appears to be exculpatory. We need time to review this. The judge says, okay, I'll put the trial over to April 16th. Defense says, judge, that's not enough time to go through 31 pages of material and to vet it and to see what we can do in terms of corroborating it or undercutting it. It's not enough time. For the moment, the judge says, well, that's very interesting, but we're going to start on April 16th. It would seem to me that this case would have to get pushed back even further than April 16th, because in addition to this 3,100 pages of material, both sides are still waiting for further DNA results. We do know that the prosecution has made a point of a press release indicating that there's no evidence of dog DNA that was found on the victim here. They're releasing that to undercut the defense theory, which has been widely circulated, that the decedent's injuries were sustained in part from an attack by the homeowners. I think it was a German Shepherd.
Yep.
Further, there's a suggestion that hair was found embedded into the cracked taillight of Karen Reed's SUV. For whatever reason, beyond me, why it's taken this long to get a DNA result of that hair sample. Clearly, if that hair that was embedded in her cracked taillight is the hair of the decedent in this matter, now that's not going to be good news for the Reed team. Why we haven't gotten that, you know, a couple of years down the line, I don't have an explanation why it's taking so long. The prosecution also made a big point of announcing that material consistent with the cracked taillight was found allegedly on the decedent's person. Fragments of plastic material consistent with the material that composes the cracked taillight. Is that scientific? Is that forensic? Or is that just the DA making that report? I don't know. Certainly, that would require expert testimony to match the plastic that's allegedly, the little pieces of plastic allegedly found on the victim, and corroborating that that material came from this vehicle and from no other source. The case keeps getting curiouser and curiouser in terms of evidence that seems to be popping up out of nowhere. Again, we've said it many times, but the defense can put forth all of these theories about dogs scratching the guy and all this is from a dog. It's nice to put that out there in the press, but it's a different thing if you try to prove or disprove or introduce evidence
right.
to corroborate the facts you're trying to put forward. I think the defense, once they can't argue their case in the press and must argue it to a judge and jury, I think the defense is going to have a real hard time.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, the Johnston Sunrise, I give them credit. It's a weekly. They've been doing a good job with this whole element of this accused immigrant case. It's a political hot potato. I'm just curious your thoughts on this. Seems to be this back and forth of, and the headline, I think, sums it up, matter of state policy, a terrible era. This was the guy that, it was unusual that they put out a press release, ICE, out of Boston, saying that the Rhode Island authorities had essentially let him go, even though there was a detainer on him. And then it set off a chain of events, a finger-pointing between Governor McKee and Attorney General Peter Noronha.
Well, it's interesting. ICE popped off with their statement or media press release, whatever it was, excoriating the Department of Corrections and the Sheriff's Department for having this illegal immigrant who was charged with first-degree child molestation somehow get back on the street. Noronha's office was quick to jump in saying, well, this was all the governor's fault because he runs the prisons. The governor's office said, we're not going to say anything till we get our facts straight. And I think that was the smartest thing they could do, because what the governor's office ultimately puts out is they got a report from the prison. They got a report from the sheriff's department. And apparently, the sheriff's department knew of this ICE detainer, which was good for 48 hours. And allegedly, the sheriff's department contacts ICE saying, listen, we got this guy. He made bail. There's an ICE detainer. You know, we can hold him for 48 hours if you guys are going to come pick him up. If you're not going to come pick him up within 48 hours, we have no choice under the 2014 detainer policy to let him go. Allegedly, ICE then says, hey, we're short staff. We don't have enough manpower. We're not going to get to this guy within 48 hours. Sorry. So, having been told we're not going to be showing up to get this guy within the 48-hour window, the man is then put back on the street, having made bail. Now, Noronha's office now, you know, scoff saying, well, it's nice that the governor's office finally gave a response. Well, I think the governor's office was smart to not just jump in and say something for the sake of saying something. They waited to see what all the facts were. And it looks like, in part, ICE, having excoriated everyone in Rhode Island, one of the problems was within ICE not having sufficient manpower to come pick this guy up per the rules and per the protocols. So it looks like ICE didn't drop the ball. ICE didn't have the manpower to do their job, which left the sheriff's office with no choice but to release the guy. And it's not up to the Bureau of Prisons. The Bureau of Prisons says, when prisoners are within our purview, behind our walls, we're responsible. But we can't necessarily control what's happening between the sheriff's department and the federal ICE officials. I think ultimately what should be called into question is the continuation of this 2014 policy, which was promulgated by the Chafee administration.
That's right.
The Raimondo administration continued it. The McKee administration has done nothing about it. So the real question, it seems to me, for the McKee administration should be, what are you going to do about the 2014 policy?
Right.
You're going to keep it in place so we can have these things happen in the future, or are you going to change it? Other than that, it seems to me that the McKee administration was not culpable in the way that Peter Noronha attempted to suggest, I guess, to score some political points. I think Noronha's office jumped in early before they knew all the facts, trying to impugn the McKee administration. It's everyone pointing fingers at each other for political gain. And this is a one-off terrible situation. But what are we going to do about the 2014 policy? Are we going to change it or not?
Right.
And that's where the focus should be.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on The John DePietro Show. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. Great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. So Governor McKee has essentially been AWOL all week. I mean, here it is the end of the week. He has not been seen. Now, Saturday, we believe he's going to show up at the, there's a St. Patrick's Day parade in Pawtucket. So he's expected to march. I wonder what that will be like. Now, meanwhile, he still has not answered about his policy. And let's be very clear. Governor McKee has not clarified the Rhode Island policy when it comes to illegals. That issue is not going away. Both President Biden and President Trump will be at the border. And more of the crimes being committed by illegals in the country are being highlighted. And I am telling you, it is a matter of time before a very, very serious crime happens here in Rhode Island. I want to play, Fox was talking about what happened on Fox News. They had, Fox News Channel, they had the situation with the illegal that murdered that poor young college student in Georgia.
But many of the tragic consequences are still being felt of many who have illegally crossed and were released into the U.S. Nothing more prominent now than the tragic murder of Lakin Riley, the University of Georgia nursing student killed at the hands of Jose Ibarra, the Venezuelan who crossed in El Paso in 2022 and was released. But that's not the only isolated case. We're learning now about many more. I can show you a full screen of this Salvadoran migrant illegally present, according to ICE. His name is Nilson Granados Trejo, accused of murdering, killing a tragic death of a two-year-old infant. And that doesn't stop in Maryland there. Go down to Louisiana, in Kenner, Louisiana, a Honduran migrant accused of raping at knife point a 14-year-old teenage girl.
You know, it is just, it is endless right now. And we do have crime here in Rhode Island. One of the reasons why it's not highlighted as much is simply because in Rhode Island, Governor McKee has it that our law enforcement agencies don't question what their immigration status is. So it doesn't automatically come out when a lot of this, when a lot of these things happen, when a lot of these crimes start to happen. So but there was a story that in Massachusetts, they, you know, they just arrested another Guatemalan child molester, sexual assault. There's definitely something, you know, there's an element of the culture that we've kind of touched on, that in, I've touched on anyway, that in South America, they seemingly, you know, a lot of the males go for younger women, and it seemingly is not against the law or frowned upon the way it is here. But it is, and right now, I think it's also interesting that we're on our own. Mass Democrats weighing tightening shelter program amid migrant influx, lack of federal help. The federal help is not coming. So this story in the Globe, no, there's no mounting cost, no signs of help from Washington, nor will there be. So in Massachusetts, they're saying they administer a shelter program. Costs are expected to reach $1 billion this year, another $1 billion next year. But then when you break down exactly who, you know, who is there, half of the people that are there are not even supposed to be in the country right now. So, I mean, this is, think of how, I mean, just think of the amount of money. Governor Healey last year, Maura Healey, imposed a 7,500 family cap on the system. And then it turned out that half of them are, in fact, of that, the 7,500, 3,745 were migrants, refugees, or asylum seekers. It's not designed that way. The money's not supposed to go there. Regular Americans are not receiving the resources they should. We're importing all this poverty. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Choppa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU. 401-900-4678, Choppa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Choppa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Choppa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Choppa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. A Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. Great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. A Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. Great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn.